everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Double Play Podcast. I'm Cody Pasby. Alongside me, as always, is Monte Hill. Crazy week of baseball, trade deadlines, playoff races are heating up. Monte, this is the best time.
Are you having fun yet?
I'm always having fun.
You got your eye black on. I mean, the seeds are popping out your mouth.
I am in my element.
Dude, this is great stuff. I sat at home all day Saturday, and I just watched the Blue Jays and Royals in the morning. Royals came back in that one. They lost 3 out of 4 in that series, but they came back in that one. The intensity level is high right now. Guys are going for it. You see the Giants right now. We're going to touch on that. The Braves are coming at them hard. Like, they're fighting for a wild card spot or something, man. This is where the story gets written.
Exactly.
Take the words from the great Marty Lurie. This is where the story gets written, where chapters are filled in. Man, I'm having a blast, man.
That's baseball, Bonte. That's baseball. Well, let's kick things off.
Play ball.
Leading off, first inning. Let's talk about the Giants here in the KNBR 680 studios. And the Giants pitching has been a bit of an issue, to say the least. This is not the same Giants from a few years back. This is a team that is an offense-first team with some pitching issues. Other than Chris Heston and Madison Bumgarner, you really can't count on the rest of that starting rotation to get you more than 6 innings. And the bullpen is completely blown up lately. So, Bonte, how worried should we be about the Giants pitching right now?
You know, I would be worried, but I just feel like this is Giants baseball. They never have the complete, well-rounded team. So it's either they have great pitching and some ragtag offense. Great bullpen, great starting pitching. Offense is mediocre. This year, obviously, like you've touched on, the offense is the best in the National League. Matt Duffy, Aoki, Blanco's having a good year. Of course, Buster Posey's making his MVP push. And I kept telling people a couple months ago, just wait for that summertime push that he usually goes on.
5 players in the top 5 in the league in OPS, or the top 25, I should say. That's still really, really good.
Really good, man. So, you know, should I be worried? You know what? They got Bumgarner. He's your ace. He's starting to get back into the groove. He's starting to be that guy. Chris Heston, you know what? Keep riding that train. He's been solid all year. There's no reason for me to think that he's going to drop off in these last 7 weeks of the season. Jake Peavy, since he's gotten off the DL, 5 quality starts out of 6. Tonight he got the win, pitched 6 innings. Granted, he grunted through those 6 innings. He grinded.
8 strikeouts in that game. He looked good.
He has some swing and miss stuff, which the Giants starters have been missing. You know, that 4th starter, or excuse me, I should say 5th starter, and Matt Cain, you know, 4.91 ERA. He got lit up yesterday. The Giants spotted him a 6-0 lead. He still gave up 10 hits in 5 innings. You know, I'm worried, but I'm not, because I feel like Bochy's going to figure it out. He's going to mix and match and play magic with these guys, and he's gonna figure it out. What about you?
Especially with the bullpen, because this seems to be the time of the season when whoever he's got in that closer spot gets taken out of that spot. Sergio Romo didn't become the closer in 2012 till about August.
Right.
I mean, the only guy who really kept that for an entire year during a World Series year was Brian Wilson.
Right.
So, and Santiago Casillas, same thing. He fell into that role after Romo sort of, in the middle of the summer, started to fall off a little bit. And right now, Casillas is really struggling. Since he blew that save in Miami at the beginning of July, these numbers, people, 7.59 ERA, 2 blown saves, the slash line against him, hitters are hitting .378, oh, 452 on base. He is just not pitching well right now. He's got nothing right now. He's gassed. And look, people don't like to hear the words closer by committee. For some reason, it's a bad word in baseball, but it shouldn't be. It's just picking matchups.
Yes.
Picking the right matchups at the right time in a game.
Yep.
And if there's anybody who's the best at that in baseball, I'd say it's Bruce Bochy. So this is when he turns it on. This is when he becomes that Hall of Fame manager that we expect.
Preach, Cody. You know, closer by committee with this team might have to get done. It just might. And I wonder, and I want to ask you this, do you think just Casilla going through a full year as a closer is finally getting to him? Because like you said, last year he didn't become the closer till late in the season. Final 2 months of the season, so the league didn't acclimate to him. And I believe in the World Series, I don't think he pitched a full inning.
I don't think he did. No, he was not really seen in that World Series. And, yeah, I think to some extent that might be the case. I mean, this has happened to Casilla in past years. I mean, back in 2012, he was the closer, had a really bad June. kind of seeped into July and got taken out of that job. So to me, this is just kind of par for the course when it comes to the Giants at this point in the season. They're going to make some nice bullpen moves, and this is what they do, and this is what Bochy does best.
Before we retire to side here in the first inning, quickly, who ends up leading in September coming out in the ninth inning for the San Francisco Giants?
You know, there's going to be Giants fans who cringe when I say this name.
Oh, I know what you're going
to say. Especially based on what he did last October.
I know what you're going to say.
But man, Hunter Strickland, I like him this year. Yeah, he gave up a couple bombs recently. I mean, that's going to happen with this guy's stuff. But he's got the closer stuff, and Bochy likes him a lot. He likes the potential he's got. I could see Hunter Strickland becoming that guy, maybe not in August, but come September, when the games are really on the line and they really count, I could see him becoming that guy. And a year of experience with all that stuff behind him, all of that drama in the postseason, I think he's going to put it to good use. And I think he could become a stellar closer. I've thought it ever since he came up. This guy could be a rock star closer. So that's my guy.
You know what? What the hell? Let it be Hunter Strickland.
Yeah,
San Francisco Giants baseball is always – it's already wacky. We're already going through torture year after year after year after year. What the hell? Make Hunter Strickland the closer.
I think George Contos is a dark horse, by the way.
Yeah, he didn't look good tonight, though.
No, not
so
good tonight.
He kind of concerned me. So, yeah. You know, that's it for the first inning. On to the second inning. Of course, we had a crazy trade deadline this season in 2015. You know, deals didn't get done. Deals got done. Blockbusters happen. Let's just run down the list real quick. The Blue Jays, they acquire David Price and Troy Tulowitzki. Troy Tulowitzki's batting leadoff, and he's crushing pitches in Toronto. And David Price had a great start Monday in his debut in Toronto.
11 strikeouts.
Oh. Whew. Yeah, the New York Mets, Tyler Clippard. Of course, they got Adde Ribe already. They got Yonis Cespedes at the trade deadline, and the Mets are surging.
You know it's a big deal when even Jerry Seinfeld says, "We've got Yonis Cespedes! Come on!"
Oh, boy. The Houston Astros, they were supposed to be a year away from actually competing.
Unbelievable.
Now they're out here making moves and grabbing Scott Kazmir, Carlos Gomez, Mike Fiers. This team's for real.
The only guy, by the way, of that trio, Kazmir is the only rental.
The only rental.
And Gomez they got for another year. They got Fiers. I love the way that team, who, like you said, they're a year, maybe even 2 years away from being where they should be right now. And I love, love, love those moves that they made.
Oh, man, they're going for it. They're going for that ring this year because I haven't seen it this wide open in a long, long time. Moving on quickly, the Kansas City Royals, they got Johnny Cueto, which we touched on in our last episode. But also Ben Zobrist. And Ben Zobrist is already making his presence felt in that lineup. He had a big weekend in Toronto. He's hitting. It seems like the perfect fit for the way the Royals play, Cody.
Love the way that the Royals are going for it, too. Three big-time American League teams absolutely pushed all their chips all in. And I love the Zobrist move especially. You can put him at left field while Gordon's out. You put him at second to fill in for Infante when Gordon's back. That's a lethal lineup with Zobrist and Gordon when he's back in that lineup. Right.
So who are the winners, Cody, of this trade deadline? Your winners?
To me, the Mets. I think the Mets saw an opportunity where the Nationals are just not the same team this year. So I don't know what it is, but they're just not that same powerhouse that they should be. And it kind of feels like the 2010 Giants, where they just needed an offense that was just good enough with all that great young pitching. A middling offense. And they get Juan Uribe, Kelly Johnson, who two corner infielders who are really, really underrated.
Yeah, yep.
We forget Juan Uribe's had some really nice years lately.
Yeah, Kelly Johnson, too. Kelly Johnson's not a bum.
Absolutely. And Yoenis Cespedes. Look, people are going to say, oh, he doesn't walk enough. He's not as great an offensive player as we think, which, yeah, that's valid. But the guy hits bombs. He's a presence in that lineup that they did not have before.
You think the Oakland A's will take that trade back from last year?
Absolutely. They,
you know what?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Mets are winners. You know, like you touched on, and I thought that when I was watching them Sunday night against the Nationals, where they swept them out in Citi Field with Syndergaard, Matt Harvey, DeGrom, and then you got Bartolo Colon helping out, anchoring that
rotation. Steven Matz coming back.
Nice has been okay.
Yeah.
Dude, this team is dangerous. They're a team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs. A winner for me, obviously the Blue Jays. They went all in. They said, the heck with these prospects. We're going to go get David Price, and we're going to get Tulo. another sneaky move they made was Ben Revere. They replaced the speed of Jose Reyes. Blue Jays are going all in, man. Mets, Blue Jays, Royals for me. I can't forget about the Astros. Quickly before we move on to the third inning, losers.
The Padres. I mean, look, A.J. Preller says this is a playoff team, that we can still make the playoffs, but this team's going to have to win a historic amount of games to get to about 88 to 90 wins. And in this new wild card era, this two wild card era, 88 is sort of that's the plateau you need to hit to sort of get to say we can be a playoff team. That's going to be so tough for the Padres. I know they have a weak August, but at the very least, I'm shocked they didn't sell off Justin Upton, who I don't expect them to re-sign him in the offseason. Sell him off to a contender, get some nice pieces. It's a boggling move because the Padres knew that they were in a similar situation in 2010 where they were up and the Giants were down and, you know, eight games back, and we know what happened there. But they have to leapfrog the Diamondbacks, the Giants, and the Dodgers. It just is a really puzzling move that I just don't get.
Yeah, I didn't get what the heck. I didn't get what they were doing before the season, even though I drunk the Kool-Aid with the Padres.
Same here.
But I didn't get what they were doing at this deadline. A loser for me is the Washington Nationals. Yes, I know they got Jonathan Papelbon to, you know, anchor that rotation. But they need a bat. They needed a bat. Yeah. And Jonas Cespedes was there for the taking. He was there. Yes, Bryce Harper's having an MVP-like season, but that's it. Everybody else, Ian Desmond is striking out at a rapid rate. Jason Worth is banged up. He's not right. Ryan Zimmerman is not right. And then you look at their pitching with Doug Fister and Jordan Zimmerman. They've been inconsistent this year when they were supposed to be solid. And not even to mention, Steven Strasburg, where is he at? Yeah, he's on a DL hurt. Again. Even when he's playing, he's inconsistent. They really got one guy in Max Scherzer. I thought the Nationals could have did more to kind of shut that momentum of the New York Mets down. Now they're in trouble.
And the Papelbon move, he's a great pitcher, but you have Drew Storen.
Yeah.
Drew Storen is a very good closer. And that, to me, that messes up the whole chemistry of the clubhouse. It's a weird thing going on there in Washington. But let's move on to the third inning and talk about something we talked about a couple episodes ago. The San Rafael Pacifics, their automated umpiring system, they had the games, and I'd say for the most part, they were a success from everything we heard.
Yeah, Bruce Jenkins over the weekend, Bruce Jenkins of the San Francisco Chronicle, said he loved it. He wasn't a believer before, but he went to the game, sat next to Eric Burns, who was calling the balls and strikes from his laptop. People loved it, and this could actually be happening in the game of baseball within the next 5 years.
These games did exactly what they were meant to do, which is calm everybody down about the idea of automated umpiring, of these robotic umpires, if you will. Because, one, it worked for the most part. It pretty much was flawless.
Mm-hmm.
The balls and strike calls were pretty much on the money. And the technology works. It's here. We've talked about it here on the show. We all have it. We all see it. It's just a matter of time. But I do think, though, baseball's such a stubborn sport, run by stubborn people,
right,
that even still, they're going to say, well, it's an independent league game. It's not a major league game. So, no, we don't need that yet. That's my only fear with it, is that I just think that Major League Baseball isn't ready to embrace it. They're always afraid of change. So my hope is maybe 5-6 years down the road, maybe even sooner, we get this in minor league baseball.
Right.
Get the minor leaguers used to it. So once they come up to the major leagues, it's not a weird thing to have that automated umpire.
Now, did this affect the pace of play in San Rafael? I heard it did not affect the pace of play. And baseball, Major League Baseball for that matter, has been big on pace of play. They've got the clock now between innings. Guys can't really step out the box, even though they still do it. But they've really limited the way guys can step out the box. If the pace of play is not affected with this, I could see baseball really in the next 2 years. I think right now they're in gear one of this automated umpire system. They need to get to gear 10.
Yeah.
So until they do that, you know, it could be 5 years, it could be seven, but I think we're headed towards that very, very soon.
And I think it's probably good for the pace of play.
Yeah.
Because you get those calls pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
And there's no more arguing balls and strikes.
Yeah.
So we don't have to waste our time with that anymore. Big thumbs up, I think, for the San Rafael Pacific.
What is the guy going to do when he argues? He's going to run up to the press box and hit his take his bat against the computer.
That's right.
Like, hey, this is wrong. Your system's flawed.
Get that aggression out, young
man. It's got a virus in it, damn it. All right. That's the end of the third inning.
Update your security system. Come on.
Please. On to the fourth inning. We touched on the New York Mets in inning number two. They just swept the Nationals over the weekend. They've taken the first two in Miami to beat up on the Marlins. Yesterday, what was it, like 13-2?
12-1.
12-1.
An explosion. Tonight, a four-run inning late in the game.
Late in the game to take that one.
Yeah,
this team is rolling. Curtis Granderson's starting to play better. David Wright is now taking BP. We talked about Cespedes, what he does. He changes the dynamic of that lineup. And then you have the pitching. And now you know what? They've got a little momentum. And you know what momentum does in a game of baseball? It could take you a long way.
It's contagious.
It is contagious.
Absolutely.
This team, Cody, is absolutely scaring me.
The offense has come to life. And we've seen that over the last few days. A guy you didn't mention that I think is probably the biggest key to their success right now is Lucas Duda.
Wow. I forgot all about Duda.
A guy that we don't realize, this guy hit 30 homers last year. This guy is the guy that the Mets said, we're going to let go of Ike Davis. Lucas Duda, you're our guy. And what a good decision that was. Duda since July 25th.
Yeah.
9 home runs, by the way, in what, I think 8 games?
8 games or something like that. Yeah, it's been insane. He's been on an insane tear. Left-handed power. He can, oh my God, I forgot all about Duda, Cody.
He's been great. A 1.219 slugging percentage since July 25th. He's been on fire. One of the best hitters in baseball in that time.
Speaking of Duda, tonight he went 2-for-5.
There you go. He's been sensational. And if you get David Wright back, you have Granderson hitting the way he's hitting. And now you got Yoenis Cespedes. That's a real nice top of your lineup where you can go Granderson, Wright, Cespedes, Duda, however you want to mix that up. That's a really solid middle of the order for a team that's already got the bullpen pieces and the starting pitching pieces.
Slight concern is Clippert at the back end, closing games. He could be shaky at times.
Familia's still there?
Yeah, Familia's still there, though. He's electric.
Mm-hmm.
This team, Cody, like you said earlier in the show, 2010 Giants, these guys got the arms. They want it. And now that New York Mets crowd is behind them. Uh-oh.
National League Baseball in New York, man, it plays well. And
people
get pumped about it. On the other side of it, though, you got the Washington Nationals. They're, to me, this is the most talented team in the National League. And yet, 6-11 in the first half. They're outside of a playoff spot, not even a wild card spot anymore. And yet, despite having probably the favorite for the MVP and the Cy Young in the National League, Ian Desmond, 621 OPS. Ryan Zimmerman, 637. Jason Worth, terrible this year. All of them are underperforming. Rendon, Worth, Ryan Zimmerman, Pfister, Strasburg, all are battling injuries.
Right.
Seems kind of in disarray right now.
And then you add the decisions from the manager, Matt Williams.
Yeah.
He has been sketchy, to say the least. And I'm putting that mildly, folks. He has not been on his game. And you wonder, did they give the job to the right person, to a guy who's never managed a big league club? This team last year was ready to win a World Series. You would have thought they got some. They would have hired somebody with some experience, but they went the Matt Williams way. And we know what happened in Game 2 of the National League Division Series against the San Francisco Giants when he took out Zimmerman when he was absolutely electric in that game.
Giants dominated were not going to touch him.
They were not going to touch him in that game. And when he got out, when he pulled Zimmerman, Giants looked like, what? New pitcher? Okay. And we know what happened with
New
life.
The Nationals, man, and Matt Williams, you're right. He's made some iffy choices. This team is so good. I just cannot get over it.
Yeah.
I think there's a clubhouse chemistry thing, but you know you're struggling when Danny Espinosa is your second best hitter. He's having a nice year.
I mean,
he should not be your second best.
If I'm not mistaken, they still have Dan Uggla on the roster.
They do indeed.
And he got a lot of run early in the year. And granted, this team coming in or coming out of spring training, I should say, Anthony Rendon was hurt. Worth was battling injuries. And Desmond has all the errors at shortstop. He's really in his own head. He's in a contract here. And he's not, you know, before the season, we're thinking he was going to make $100 million.
All this said, who comes out on top in the NL East when it's all said
and done? I'm going with the New York Mets, man.
Wow.
I'm going with the New York Mets, Cody. I don't like the body language of the Washington Nationals. I don't like the way they're going out there. I don't think they're busting their butt for Matt Williams as much as they could. You know what? And I think this collapse, if they do lose, because they had a chance in the first half of the season to put the New York Mets away. And they let this team hang around to the point where the Mets said, you know what? Let's pull the trigger on a couple deals and let's get in this thing. We're right there. And guess what? They're right there. I feel like the Nationals are going to collapse. They're going to miss out on the playoffs. And Matt Williams is going to be out of there.
And there's so many. And you almost felt like this something like this might happen in the offseason with the whole Desmond contract situation, not re-signing him, and he is just falling off the face of the earth. The Jordan Zimmermann situation where he was getting thrown around in trade rumors that they give Max Scherzer all this money, and yet they can't afford to re-sign Zimmermann and Pfister. I think there's a lot of hurt egos in that locker room. I think you're right. I think it's going to be a race to the finish.
This
I think
gonna
it's going to be really close.
It's going to be good.
I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked if it's the Mets, and who knows, maybe it's Giants Nationals, Pirates Nationals in that wild card game. Wouldn't that be wild?
Wow.
Fifth inning. Let's move on. The NL East is going to be nuts, but let's move over to the West, the AL West, where the Houston Astros, folks, this is a team that going into the All-Star break, the Angels got back in first. The Astros were kind of fading. Felt like everything was going back to normal. And then the Astros traded for Carlos Gomez and Scott Kazmir. And suddenly they're three games up in the AL West after a big series win against the Angels. 11-5 in the second half. I believe in this team.
Oh, I've believed this team from early on. And you talked about Scott Kazmir. In July, he's at a 0.26 ERA, Cody. He's been electric. He's pitching back home in that ballpark, backed by an offense that, let's face it, they're either going to hit a home run, they're going to walk, or they're going to strike out. They don't care. And they can when they connect, they connect.
And when you've got the most homers in the American League, fourth best OPS in the American League, you can live with that.
Jose Altuve, MVP candidate possibly.
Absolutely.
You got the hot shot in Carlos Correa. You got you got bats. And Carlos Gomez was just an under-the-radar move. But let's not toot our horns with the Astros because we can't count out the Angels. But I'm looking at that third-place team that just acquired Cole Hamels. Yovani Gallardo's pitching better. The Texas Rangers, they're coming.
And they're feeling good, especially after that series win against the Giants. Mm-hmm. They're facing the Astros right now, and they won that first game against the Astros.
They really should have swept the Giants.
They absolutely should have. They're feeling really good. You're right. Prince Fielder's playing spectacular baseball. Adrian Beltre's turned it back.
Cycle on. Yesterday hit for the cycle.
It could be a little Texas two-step here. You could have You could have Houston and the Rangers first and second in that division. Who would have thought?
Man, these pennant races. I mean, we're touching on the AL West right now. We touched on the NL East, the Central. This is wild stuff, folks. This is wild. I don't know what's going to happen in the West. Are the Astros? Are the young guns going to wilt? Are they going to fade?
I like the Astros, man. To me, the best pitching staff in that division. I love the offense. A guy you didn't mention, George Springer.
Is coming back soon.
He's coming back.
Yep.
And I thought he was all-star worthy before he got hurt.
He was stealing base at will.
He could be the best hitter on that team.
Yeah.
Even with a Carlos Gomez there. I really liked what the Astros had done. Yeah. I liked the back end of their bullpen. I love the pitching staff. I mean, Dallas Keuchel, to me, right now, it's either him or you could even say Scott Kazmir or Sonny Gray for the American League Cy Young Award.
Wow.
I love that team. I love and I think that they have a confidence where
they have the swagger.
They don't care. They have nothing to lose. Yep. They're not supposed to be here. But I love that American League West division. And you said about the races. They're really fun. Even more so this year because you're getting teams like the Astros.
Yes.
Like the Kansas. Yep. Yes, the Royals went to the World Series last year, but they weren't this good. The Blue Jays are back in it. The Mets.
These teams are young.
The Cubs. They're all in it right now, and Pirates. That's what makes it more fun.
Yeah, you know what? This Angels team, they went through a lot of stuff this season.
It's still a talented roster.
Josh Hamilton scenario where they ended up shipping him off to Texas for nothing. You know, they fired their GM. Socha seemed like he was on a hot seat. But Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, hey, Cole Calhoun. He's having a hell of a year.
I like Calhoun.
You know, Calhoun is a baller. You know, this team, don't count out the Angels either. I do like the Astros, though. I've liked this team from jump. And there's always a surprise team in baseball. Every year we have these surprise teams. This team, the Astros, they're there. They're going to be around for years, man.
They're the real deal for a long time to come. Let's move on to the sixth inning. And let's head back, stay in the West, down to L.A. And by the way, very soon we'll have Rayshon Halock of FoxSportsWest.com to talk about this guy right here, Clayton Kershaw, who has vaulted himself back in the Cy Young conversation with a sensational July. Since July 3rd, a 0.22 ERA, a 148 batting average against, 51 strikeouts in 41 innings pitched. Guy is not allowed a run in 37 innings.
Oh, my
God. We were saying this guy, uh-oh, what's happening, Clayton? Uh-oh, this isn't good. The best pitcher of in the world is finally human. And now we're saying this guy might actually have a chance to win another Cy Young Award if he keeps this up. You kidding me?
He's battling his teammate, Zach Greinke, who, what did he throw, 44, 45 shutout innings, yeah, or 44, two-thirds, I don't, something like that. So he's trying to match Zach Greinke. He's trying to match his own, he's competing against his old teammate.
That's healthy competition within the clubhouse.
You know what, I think Kershaw, he took that loss in the All-Star game, and he got roasted for it. And I think he just said, you know what, the hell with it. I'm just going to be me.
He said, did everybody forget who I am?
Right.
I won the MVP last year. I won the Cy Young Award. I'm the best pitcher in the world, and he has proved it. His stuff is so much better now. He just looks so much more polished, focused. He looks like Clayton Kershaw, and it's just kind of like he's back to normal. A 0.22 ERA, most of the time we go, oh my God, this guy's amazing. This is back to normal for Clayton Kershaw.
And they need Kershaw. They need Kershaw to be that anchor, to be that guy, because if he doesn't go 7 or 8 innings, they don't really have anybody that could get to Kelly Jensen. That's where the Dodgers struggle. Yeah. So they need Kershaw, Greinke, Matt Latos, to go six, Alex Wood. They need them to go 6 to 7 innings. Because mm-hmm. if they don't, if you could get to these guys early, and granted, you're not getting to Kershaw right now. You're not getting to Greinke.
No way.
The dog days are here, and they've stepped their game up. And their stuff is just looking electric. I'm petrified right now as a Giants fan watching Kershaw and Greinke pitch for the Dodgers.
The Dodgers have let these other teams in the NL West, because we think, you know, the Padres and Diamondbacks are on the outside looking in, but they're still, what, 6-7 games out. That's within striking distance at this point. But the Giants are right there, right on their tails. And to some extent, some people say the Dodgers should have already taken that next step and been about 5-6 games ahead of them.
Yep.
Now you've got Kershaw pitching the way he is. I really like the move to get Latos and Alex Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Wood is a really underrated, great young pitcher. Yeah. Latos has been great since coming off the DL. Watch out, man. I think that pitching staff, I think that the front office is the most creative in baseball. I mean, Farhan Zaidi and Andrew Freeman, they did the sabermetrics thing in Tampa and
now
in Oakland.
Now they have money to spend.
Exactly. They're doing that and also spending all this money where they could take on these big contracts and immediately cut them. It is wacky what's the way they're doing it. It's interesting. It's new. And they have constructed a spectacular pitching staff. That top four, I think, competes with any top four in Major League Baseball.
They didn't trade Seager. They didn't trade Seager, the hotshot shortstop, the brother of Kyle Seager.
Maybe that's why they get rid of a guy like Hector Olivera, where was it Seager or Olivera? And they decided, let's get rid of Olivera instead.
Wow.
The Dodgers are just kind of sitting quietly, ready to pounce.
Yeah.
Watch out. This is going to be a fun race in the NL West down the stretch. But it's time for the seventh inning.
It's time to stretch. Sing a little God Bless America, folks.
Get up. Get whatever you need. Drinks, peanuts, whatever. We'll be back talking more L.A. baseball. Even here in the Bay Area, here in Northern California, we always have our eyes down on the coast.
Yeah, we do.
Always. With Rayshon Haylock of FoxSportsWest.com. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on the Double Play Podcast.
And welcome back to the Double Play Podcast with myself, Bonte Hill, and my partner in crime, Cody Pasby, on the line with us here to give us an L.A. perspective on the Dodgers and the Angels from FoxSportsWest.com, Mr. Rayshon Haylock, man. What's going on?
What's going on, fellas?
Man, first of all, we want to congratulate you on getting married in the last month or so. You're coming back straight from Jamaica, man. You've been out the loop a little bit.
Oh, man.
But I know you was on that phone a little bit checking those Yahoo scores, seeing where the Dodgers and Angels was doing, huh?
You know, I had to sneak it in while wifey was sleeping. she wanted me to go completely off the grid. I was like, well, all right, for sure, babe. And then, you know, I had to roll over, you know, one eye open, had to, you know, check out some of the scores and stuff a little bit. And that ESPN Deportes out there, so I mean, I might not understand what they were saying, but I get the score.
I know you made sure that brightness on the phone was turned down, huh?
Right.
Exactly.
Let's kick this thing off, man. Here we are, 2015, And we have another pennant race between the San Francisco Giants and the L.A. Dodgers. The Los Angeles Dodgers right now are up 2 games on the Giants in the NL West. Both teams made moves at the trading deadline. Dodgers just acquired a slew of players, highlighted by Mike Latos. Talk about that deal and what he's done. He had a great start against the Angels this past Sunday. Talk about what he's doing and how the clubhouse is adapting to Matt Latos, because we know he has a big personality, and we know he hates the Giants. So up here, we're really interested on Matt Latos and what he's going to do for the Dodgers.
Yeah, that was his debut, and it was in the Freeway Series against the Angels. And like you said, he pitched well. I think that's a big acquisition for the Dodgers, because everybody knows they needed some arms. I mean, for a while, it was really Zach Greinke and four other guys, and included in that mix of four other guys was Clayton Kershaw, reigning Cy Young Award and MVP, who wasn't having a Clayton Kershaw-type year. But, you know, he's since turned the page. He's turned things around. Greinke, of course, is doing what he's doing, and they needed a third arm. The rotation was just depleted by injuries from the start of the year. And so picking up Latos was a huge acquisition by that Dodgers front office. He came in, like you said, he pitched well in his debut against the Angels. And hopefully he can keep that up.
Yeah, you talk about Latos keeping it up. He gives you that third arm. And now Clayton Kershaw's back to being Clayton Kershaw. He's been looking absolutely filthy. I know Cody typed up some stats here, what Kershaw's done since July 3rd. 0.22 ERA. Opponents are batting under .150 against him. Jesus Christ, man.
It's unreal. He's definitely stepped it up. And at the beginning of the year, for whatever reason, it just wasn't happening. It looked like, you know, people around the league were starting to get a read on him. They were hitting him much better. And you look at his ERA, and it was up there in the high threes. Actually, it was even higher than that. He actually brought it down. He was in the high threes, and then all of a sudden he's on the last player voted in ballot, and he didn't even get voted in. He didn't get voted in the All-Star game. He made it to the All-Star game because of Max Scherzer pitching on the Sunday before the All-Star game, making him ineligible to pitch in the All-Star game. So as a result, that's how Kershaw was able to make it to Cincinnati this season. But I mean, you talk about turning the page. I mean, he's right back on track. You know, he's doing the things that we've seen him do the last couple of seasons, in which, you know, he's won a couple of Cy Young Awards and he's won an MVP. And like you said, the results are staggering. And he went out and he threw another 8 scoreless against the Angels on Saturday. So his scoreless inning streak, I believe, is up to 37, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So he's been lights out. And he and Greinke had scoreless inning streaks going simultaneously. And Zach's not his last time, but his start before his last. His got snapped. But, I mean, you talk about a 1 and a 1A at the top of your rotation. That's as good as any in baseball. But the question here in Los Angeles, and I'm sure people are talking about it nationwide as well, is we've seen this before. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen this act before. We've seen Clayton Kershaw and April and May and June, July, August, September. We've seen this guy. We've seen this happen. It's the same old song. It's entertaining. It's awesome to watch. It's quite riveting, honestly. When you look at the numbers, it's staggering. But we've seen this act before. What's going to happen in October? What Kershaw is going to come to the mound in October? Is it going to be the one who, you know, won 2 Cy Youngs and an MVP? Or is it going to be the one who somehow seemed to can't get it together in October and the one that gets shellacked, you know, by the Cardinals as he did last season?
Rayshon, I touch on that a little bit more. They go to the postseason, and again, Kershaw just isn't able to put it together. What do you think the fan reaction is going to be? Are they going to be totally on his side still, because this is still a guy who statistically is the best pitcher in baseball? Or is there going to be some backlash from the Dodger fans? What do you think how they're going to react?
It's interesting, because I think he hit the nail on the head. I think he's gotten a pass. You know, he's gotten a pass in the past. But I think after the last episode, I think, you know, there's some rumblings. You know what I mean? There's some people who are like, all right, well, that's Kershaw. We give him a pass. But, you know, you get the sense that people aren't going to be as patient, you know, the next time around. you get the sense that people are like, okay, like, dude, we need to get over this. You need to get over this hurdle in order for the Dodgers to be able to have some success come October, come postseason play, to snap this long streak that they have, not winning the World Series since 1988. So I think if in fact he gets to October and he bombs again like he's done in recent memory, then I think he's going to hear it from the fans. And I think they're not going to be as forgiving as they have been in the last few years.
Now, let's talk about Zach Greinke, the Dodgers' other ace, because there has been some rumblings that he may opt out of this deal come to the end of the year. There's even been rumblings that he kind of likes San Francisco.
Uh-oh.
So, but I do want to kind of look at that big trade where they acquire Alex Wood, because I know Farhan Saidi and Andrew Freeman are always thinking about right now, but also about 10 steps ahead of everybody else. Alex Wood was acquired in this deal, 24-year-old pitcher who's been very good the last few years. Do you think that Alex Wood might have been maybe a backup plan in case Zach Greinke goes? And do you see Zach Greinke opting out of that deal at the end of the year?
What was on the mound tonight and didn't look too good for the Dodgers, but not to discredit anything that he's done in the past. I actually saw him go out in Atlanta. I was visiting my then girlfriend at the time. We're now married, as you guys talked about earlier on and at the top of the show. But I saw him dealing. I mean, him and Jose Fernandez went head-to-head. It was unreal. It was out in Atlanta at Turner Field, and they set a MLB record for the most combined strikeouts in a 9-inning game. I mean, those guys were going toe-to-toe, and I was interested in seeing Fernandez, and I'm like, wow, it was Alex Wood kid, you know, going toe-to-toe with him. This is a guy who has shown a lot of strikeout ability, you know, over the years, but you never know with these. It's so hard to get a read on Andrew Friedman and this Dodgers front office and what it is that they're trying to do. I think in the past it was, okay, we're going to spend money while we build up the farm system, but we're going to spend money in order to give the fans a product while we wait on all our young talent to come up. And while I think that's still the philosophy, I think with Andrew Freeman coming in and having a budget and not being handcuffed financially and being able to make moves and being able to make deals, it's interesting to see some of the moves the moves that he's made. He's made some big moves from a financial standpoint, but he's also made some cost-saving moves as well. So I don't see Wood as the replacement per se. I think if Greinke opts out, I think they will give him an offer, but I don't know if it's going to be the years that Greinke may be looking for. And if that's the case, then I guess you're right in a sense that, you know, Wood would be, in a sense, the backup plan.
Now, one more player I do want to touch on in this trade. Half of baseball seems like they were involved in this Matt Latos, Braves, Dodgers, Marlins deal, is Hector Oliveira, who was signed in the offseason by the Dodgers and suddenly shipped off. Was this maybe the most shocking part of this whole deal?
That was a huge that was a huge surprise. I mean, I'm out on the honeymoon, and I see that on the bottom line. I'm like, whoa, like where'd that come from? He was tearing it up, and he looked to be on the fast track to joining the Dodgers this season. Now and in the midst of his tear in Double A, didn't spend much time in Double A, and Triple A Oklahoma City, he was injured. And I think that kind of, you know, slowed down his process in a sense that having to be placed on the disabled list. But in no realm of possibility or in my imagination that I think that he would be traded, that I think that he would be trade bait. If anything, I thought they would have got rid of Alex Guerrero, who has openly asked for a trade, who is griped about not getting the at-bats that he wants or he needs or he feels like he deserves, and who at the beginning of the season could do no wrong in Dodgers' eyes, because in the limited at-bats that he was getting, they were all quality at-bats and he was hitting big-time home runs, and people were questioning Donnie Baseball, why is this guy not in the lineup every single day? And once they traded Juan Uribe, you thought maybe the door would open up for Guerrero more, but it hasn't. Instead, it's been Justin Turner getting the majority of those starts there at third base. And Turner's having a phenomenal year. Let's not take anything away from him. And he's by far, I think, exceeded any of the expectations that the Dodgers organization had for him coming into this season. And he made a point coming into the season. He spoke with management, and he told them, look, I don't want to be just a guy you plug in every now and then. And like, I'm really going to devote myself this offseason, this winter, into getting my body right and to strengthening myself so that I can be available to be out there, to be an everyday guy, so that you don't have to worry about, feeling the need to give me a day here and there. And so far, I mean, for the most part, he's been durable. Now, he is, injured as we speak right now, but before this setback, he's been about as durable as, anybody on the Dodgers. Still, that begs the question of Guerrero. I mean, he's openly asked for a trade, but no trade has come. So I thought he would be the guy that they would send off. Instead, it was Hector, and it was quite surprising because you figured that he would not only be here with the Dodgers, but somehow, some way, they were going to find a way to get him in the lineup, and he's going to have an impact on them if they made their run towards October.
It's interesting you talk about Alex Guerrero, who got off to the hot start. And tonight I'm looking at his average. He's batting .234, and he had the hat trick tonight with three strikeouts. Now, another guy, there's two guys, one who's a quote-unquote clubhouse nuisance in Yasiel Puig, and the hotshot rookie in Jock Peterson, who at the home run derby seemed like he was the darling of the rookie class. And now he's batting 6th, 7th. His average is dipping in the 220s. What is going on with Jock Peterson and Yasiel Puig? Because they're both struggling.
They are both struggling. I think with Jock, even though he made the All-Star game and even though, he put on that performance in the home run derby, I think for the most part it's been feast or famine with him, and that's been all season long. I mean, either it's a strikeout or a home run for the most part. I mean, he's not a guy that's working the count, that's going to draw a walk, that's going to, force himself to get on base a lot, which is the reason why they had to move him out of that number one spot. In the lineup, it's been a lot of feast or famine, and thankfully for him, for his sake, he's been able to hit the ball out of the yard a lot. He's hit a ton of home runs, and I think that's what's kept him up here, with the big club. Because there were some rumblings earlier in the season about, how long will they wait before they send this guy, down to AAA to get some more work.
Wow.
But his glove, it's phenomenal. I mean, he showed tremendous range in center field. He's a true center fielder in the sense that he covers a ton of ground out there. You've seen the phenomenal catches that he's made, day in and day out. And this is a player that the Dodgers haven't had, in terms of, pure defensibility out there in the middle of the outfield in quite some time. As far as Yasiel goes, he was slowed by injuries earlier in the year. I think he'll come around. I think the injuries really bothered him. I think he never really was able to get on track, because of the injuries. But I think this is a guy that if you're Don Mattingly, you're not necessarily worried about. I mean, you're worried about him in a sense because he's a wild card. You're not necessarily sure what he's going to do. But he's toned down a lot from when he first came up. At the very least, he's going to give you maximum effort. He's going to go out there. He's going to compete. He's going to play hard every single day. Now, there may be some bonehead plays that come in there with that, but he's going to compete. He's going to give you what he has. And I think we've seen him become more patient at the plate, and I think that patience is going to pay off here sooner rather than later.
You talk about patience, Rayshon, and we're talking to Rayshon Haylock at FoxSportsWest.com down in Southern California. Speaking of patience, a guy who has been rumored in trades, it seems like, for the last 5 years, Andre Ethier. Seems like he's been a godsend for this team. He's really stepped up his play and always thought, man, if you give this guy every day at-bats, he can be something good. He's always been able to hit for average, hit for power, hits all fields. I feel like he has great plate discipline. But talk about Andre Ethier. He really seems comfortable now that he's getting every day at-bats and he's batting .280. He's playing really well for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player. It was just tough. It's tough to get him at bats. Such a crowded, not only a crowded outfield, but a star-studded outfield. Yeah. I mean, you got Ethier, and granted, he's a good player, but he was playing behind guys like Kemp, who, was once upon a time, believe it or not, I mean, maybe hard to believe today, but once upon a time, he was an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
He was an MVP mix. Yasiel Puig, who came up here, when he came up, he just took the whole league by storm. And then, of course, Carl Crawford, who's proven all-star, you know, when he got here. So not only was there a lot of outfielders, but, I mean, they're bona fide stars for the most part in the outfield who Ethier was playing behind. And he's a lefty. And the fact that he didn't hit lefties very well kind of went against him. But, I mean, you got a taste of, you know, what he can do with the two home runs in the sweep against the Angels on Sunday. He hit the two home runs, including the walk-off winner on Sunday, and it was shades of 09 when he was the darling here. I mean, he was Mr. Walk-Off. He had six walk-offs in 09, and, you know, a couple of those were home runs, and he was, you know, the toast of the town, you know, and he kind of got back. He kind of got back to that on Sunday, and as you mentioned, he's having a great year at the plate. And he's getting, you know, some extra at-bats. But he was rumored in a ton of trades. You know, there was a time where people thought he was going to end up in Boston with his buddy Pedroia.
Yeah.
I mean, just recently, before this trade deadline, there was, you know, you turn on the radio out here, and a lot of people were proposing that, you know, he got traded down the five to the Angels for C.J. Wilson before wow. Wilson had, you know, before he had his injury. And it made perfect sense. The Dodgers needed another arm, and the Angels – you know, God bless them, they needed a left fielder. And I mean, they've tried it, just about everybody except me out there in left field this season, and it hasn't worked for any of them.
Right.
And it seemed like it made perfect sense for both teams, but, you know, it didn't work out, or I don't even know if it was an option between, you know, if the teams even discussed it, but it was definitely being discussed on a radio out here. But, I mean, he's a guy that he can hit. I mean, he's always been able to hit. For average, the power has been about average for the most part. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to go up there and give you 25 to 30 home runs a year. But, I mean, he hits for moderate power. But he's a guy that's always, for the most part, been able to hit with average when given the opportunity. You know, he's getting it now.
The Dodgers and Don Mattingly has always seemed to be a relationship that's kind of always in flux. If the Dodgers can't get it done again this year with all the talent they've got and can't just get that World Series title, is Don Mattingly out of town, or are they going to give him one more shot?
I don't think so. I mean, if they have a team on the ropes and all of a sudden there's just this huge debacle, like say they go up 3-1 and they just lose it, you know, in a 7-game series against, you know, whoever, then I think maybe you have some issues. But barring something major, I don't think so. I think over time, and it's taken time, he's slowly but surely earning the trust of the front office. Now, it's still not there all the way. Don't get me wrong, by any stretch of the imagination, but he's made considerable strides from when he first took over, once Joe Torre left. So I don't think that I wouldn't think that he's in jeopardy of losing his job if the Dodgers don't win it all. I don't see this necessarily as a World Series title or bust type of year. Now, I know fans are getting antsy, but I mean, if you look at this team as it's constructed right now, I'm not sure that they have the pitching to be able to do it. I mean, right now, this isn't a World Series winning pitching staff. I mean, you got Greinke and Kershaw at the top of your rotation, granted. As we mentioned, Kershaw is a huge question mark in October. We still don't know what we're going to get from him. But the bullpen is atrocious. I mean, Kenley Jansen, you know, he's a decent closer, but you got to get to him. And they've had their issues getting to him. And then once they get to him, I mean, he's had his struggles this season as well. He's been a little up and down. So I wouldn't consider this a World Series championship season or bust for Mattingly. I think if you talk to some of the players, I think in recent years, I think him just getting the Dodgers to the postseason, him just managing all of those egos behind closed doors, a lot of stuff that we don't get to see every day, I think he earned a ton of respect from the players and should have been, you know, applauded more for keeping the train on track, so to speak, as opposed to, you know, the whole thing derailing. And I think that was a point of emphasis in the book that was put out recently, the the best team money can buy. So I think he's safe. I'd say he's safe. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I'd bet that he's safe.
If we get you out of here with this last one, we got to touch on the Angels, the California, Anaheim, Los Angeles. I don't even know their name. I just know they're the Angels, and they play by Disneyland. I can't keep up with Art Moreno or whatever they're doing. But quickly on them, they didn't really make any big-time moves. I thought they were a team that could have really used a Carlos Gonzalez, another bat, maybe another pitcher, especially in this market where everybody was gunning for pitchers. And you see the Astros make all these moves. You know, they got Friars and they got Scott Kazmir from the A's, and they got Carlos Gomez from the Brewers as well. What is going on with the Angels? They're only 2.5 back, but C.J. Wilson's hurt now. How do you feel about them and their shot to get to October and actually win some playoff games in the month of October?
I'm actually less concerned about the Angels than I am the Dodgers.
Wow.
I think that this team, they finally were able to find their groove. It's been offensively for them all season. There's a big gaping hole in left field. They went out and they acquired a couple of left fielders, Ivan DeJesus being one of them. And so they're trying to find a fixture there out in that corner outfield position. But the pitching is money. I mean, granted, you lose C.J. Wilson, but you look at guys like Matt Shoemaker. He had a rough start to the season, but he's starting to turn it around and throw the ball well. Garrett Richards, if you ask anybody, he has some of the nastiest stuff in all of baseball. He was, one of the surprise players, of last season and was just filthy. And he's finding his groove. Andrew Heaney has been remarkable for them since being called up. He was called up last year. We were one on the DL, and he was a guy that was picked up for Howie Kendrick in the offseason. Remember, he was the guy that got traded from the Marlins to the Dodgers to the Angels all on the same day. But he's been phenomenal. He suffered his first loss of the season over the weekend in a freeway series, but it wasn't because of, his doing. He pitched phenomenally in that game as well. So, I mean, yeah, you lose C.J. Wilson, but the bullpen solid. You got Street and you got Joe Smith and Houston Street at the back of that bullpen. So I'm actually less concerned about the Angels than I am the Dodgers. If they hit, which they showed the ability to do recently, basically all of July, then they'll be all right. It has to be more than just Pujols and Trout, and there's been other guys that have been stepping up in that lineup that have gotten up to this point. And I think you'll see the cream rise to the top, in a sense, in this race between them and Houston.
Wow, man, this was fun. Great pennant races down the stretch here with the Astros, the Angels, and the Rangers are now 6 games back. They made some moves. Then you got the Dodgers and Giants out here in the NL West, man. This was good stuff, Rayshon, man. We got to do this again before the season's out. It's the dog days, baby. This is when people earn their money.
Absolutely.
Hey, anytime, big dog, you know it.
All right, Rayshon, man, thanks a lot for your time again. I was Rayshon Halock from FoxSportsWest.com here on the Double Play Podcast.
Once again, thanks to Rayshon Halock of FoxSportsWest.com for joining us, breaking down the L.A. baseball scene. Let's go on to the eighth inning and the Jays and the Royals. We talked about the series a little bit. Playoff atmosphere. That was fun. Who would have thought the Blue Jays and the Royals a couple of years ago would be a playoff atmosphere at the end of July into August? And yet it was, because people were getting beaned. The Royals are a little chippy this year, aren't they?
Oh, they're man. What is this, like the fifth fight with a team?
Yeah, it feels like it.
They've had trouble with the A's. They got into it with the Angels and Mike Trout, specifically Ventura.
Oh, man.
Donald Ventura, by the way, who got sent down a couple weeks ago and called right back up because Jason Vargas
was out for the year now.
Yeah, he blew out his elbow.
Yeah.
He starts to run his mouth on Twitter. So, surprise, surprise. Now, I will preface it with this. The Jays were the team hitting more players than the Royals in this series. The Royals have been a little chippy this year, like we said. Right. But then Ventura goes on Twitter and says this to Jose Bautista.
Right.
We'll meet again later, and if you do that with me, you'll see what I'm about. I don't care about anybody. I used to respect you, but you're a nobody. You got lucky this time, but MLB doesn't get canceled after this season.
What?
I don't even know what that means.
Wow.
Keep running your mouth. You need to stop giving signs. You're going to get it from me for being fresh, and you really are a nobody.
Wow.
You're a nobody.
Wow.
This and, dude is, you know, 50 home runs in a season, six-time All-Star. You're a nobody.
When it comes to Ventura, Bautista actually took the high road and said the guy just needs to mature a little bit. But Jose Bautista actually had words for Ned Yost. You know, Ned Yost felt like the umpires did a great job in that finale on Sunday. And he goes, hey, I lost a lot of respect for that man today. That's it. Mm. I lost a lot of respect. How could he say that? Because let's be honest. The Royals, yeah, the Blue Jays hit some guys. But what were the Royals doing to Josh Donaldson?
Yeah.
Each pitcher that came into that game for the Royals
got in on Donaldson.
Went straight for his chin. Tulowitzki got hit on the elbow or wrist or something like that in that game. The Royals, they're not very much, they're not the most friendliest bunch out there.
No, I think they've had a chip on the shoulder ever since they lost Game 7. I think everyone said, nah, the Royals are going to be a third or fourth place team.
Right.
And they have been wearing it all year, and they're saying, hell no, we're not. We went to the World Series last year. We're not a third or fourth place team, and their attitude has been showing it, man. And look, someone's saying Jose Bautista's stealing signs. Man, I'm sorry. This guy, maybe the guy's just Joey a spectacular Betts. Ball player.
Right.
He's Joey Betts,
Joey
people.
Betts, people. So, hey, if they meet in the playoffs.
Oh, I would love nothing more than an ALCS between the Jays and the Royals. That would be fun. Time to wrap things up.
Yep.
Ninth inning. Quickly, Bonte, give me your series to watch for the rest of the week here.
You know, I could be a homer and say Giants-Cubs because that is a big game.
It'll be
big
huge.
Four-game series. But I'm looking at the boys down in L.A., the Dodgers. They're flying. They're going to Pittsburgh. They're in Philadelphia now. They go to Pittsburgh to the west side of Pennsylvania and play the Pirates in a huge three-game series, and that kicks off with Clayton Kershaw and Gerrit Cole.
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a matchup.
And then on the Sunday night, on the nightcap, you got Alex Wood versus Francisco Liriano. Pirates are right there trying to chase the Cardinals. They're holding on to that first wild card spot. They're playing well. They just picked up Mike Morse. He's batting low in seventh in the lineup.
Going to get revenge on his old team that he was only on for about 2 hours.
So that's the series I'm looking forward to. That's a big series for the Dodgers. It'll be interesting to see what the Dodgers do on the road. Because they really, you know, on the road, they're kind of a 50-50 ball club,
right,
man. You know, and their lineup is struggling. Other than Adrian Gonzalez and Andre Ethier, Howie Kendrick.
The bats are not what they used to be on that
team. Yeah, they're not swinging at bats.
That's true. I'm going to go East Coast. Jays, Yankees.
Ooh.
This is the start of 13 more games left between these two. The Yankees are six games up. They're looking great. They just destroyed Boston tonight.
They scored 9 runs, I believe, in the seventh or eighth inning.
That offense is the truth
right
now. They're
exploding on everybody.
They've got Tanaka back. They've got pitching back. And this is the Jays' chance. Really, this is it right here. They need to at least take 2 out of 3 against the Yankees to have a legitimate shot of the American League East. They're only 5.5. They're 5.5 games back right now, and I can't wait to see this series. The Jays right now are feeling themselves. They're feeling a little cocky. So it'll be fun to see how they respond against the big boys in New York.
Oh yeah, I feel like every game in this series is going to be something like 10-7, 9-8. You know, high scoring. The Jays don't have the pitching outside of David Price to hang with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yankees have the better pitching, and if you get to the eighth inning against the Yankees, it's pretty much over.
Got to face Dylan Patanzas, Andrew Miller, which might be the best one.
Said it again,
punch.
The eighth inning guy?
That's Dylan Patanzas.
Dylan Patanzas.
Don't forget the name.
Don't forget it. And learn how to pronounce it like myself.
So. And don't forget us. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, @DoublePlay_pod. Audio Boom, we're there. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Review us. Rate us.
Like us on Facebook, folks.
Like us on Facebook. Yeah, that's right. We got Facebook, too. We're covering all our bases here, all the Double Play podcast. And boy, it's going to be a great weekend of baseball. It's going to be we're here in the pennant race, the stretch run.
We're not talking more baseball.
That's it, man. That's all the time
we
got for
next week.
We got to wait all the way to next week. I'm sorry.
Man.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay. That's a long time. That's a long time, man. That's a long time.
I feel like it sometimes.
Dude, this stuff is good, folks. How can you not be excited? Giants are going for back-to-back championships. Royals trying to get back to the World Series. The Astros are trying to make their presence felt. It's like, hey, we're here now. You're going to have to deal with us for the next 5 to 10 years. You got the Yankees. They're actually quiet. Both New York teams have just snuck out of nowhere.
The Yankees and Cardinals, the two powerhouses of all of baseball, the most historic franchise in baseball, are quietly the best teams in their respective leagues right now. Or at least it feels that way. It's going to be a real fun end to the season. But until next time, Bonte, Cody, 9 in. 9 topics every single week right here on the Double Play Podcast.